Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In the second part of the transcendental question in Immanuel Kant's Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics, he is going to talk about principles, that is, Grundsätze, of possible experience, Erfahrung. And he's already distinguished between judgments of perception and experience and talked about a number of other important ideas, for example, pure concepts of the understanding, which are brought in the judgments of understanding to go beyond merely sensible experience as such and give us something that can be a priori, that can be objectively valid, that can be universal, necessary, whatever other way we want to describe it. Now we're going to refine that a little bit more with this notion of principles, and that is going to give us what it is that he's asking about and looking for in this second part, namely a pure natural science. So he begins section 23 by talking about judgments, Urteile, when considered merely as the condition of the unification of given representations in a consciousness. So that's what a judgment is doing, right? It is unifying two things, at least typically two things. We're saying, I judge that S is P, right? We're taking P and we're taking S and we're putting them together in certain ways. And we've got all these, you know, interesting ways of doing that you find in the logical table of judgments and in the transcendental table of the concepts of the understanding a little bit earlier in the work and also found in the Critique of Pure Reason. So coming back to this, judgments, when considered merely as the condition of the unification, are rules, Regeln in German, right? So rules tell us what to do. They guide us. And this is a really important idea for Kant. How do we, in fact, take the things that we experience and make sense of them? Whether for ourselves, in subjectively valid judgments, cognitions, statements, propositions, or for consciousness in general, Bewusstsein überhaupt, which is what gives us objectively valid judgments. So he says, these rules, so far as they represent the unification as necessary, are a priori. That's basic stuff. That's part of what it means to be a priori, independent of any individual empirical experience, and so far as they cannot be deduced from higher rules, are principles. This is a very important point that he's making. So we could have rules that could be deduced from higher rules, and those would not be principles. We're interested in those that are at sort of the highest level of generality and are not being determined by other rules, giving us some sort of logical bedrock, you could say. So he says, in regard to the possibility of experience, no conditions of judgments of experience are higher than those which bring the phenomena, according to the different form of their intuition, under pure concepts of the understanding, right? Verstandesbegriffe, and render the empirical judgments, judgments about what we're experiencing, objectively valid. And so he says, these are therefore the a priori principles of not just the experience that we have, all possible experience. So if we can figure out what these are, we are really in good shape as far as understanding how our mind works and interacts with all the things that we not only do experience, but could experience, or anyone could experience. We get a generality, a necessity to it. And so he says, okay, these principles of possible experience are then, at the same time, universal laws of nature. Okay, this is what natural science, pure natural science, is supposed to be giving us. That's what the discipline itself is treating. This whole world that we experience within, what are the laws governing this world? Now you, if you're used to thinking about physics, you might be like, well, he's not talking about gravity here, or stuff like that. No, Kant is going even further back, you could say, and thinking about how can we even experience anything coherently, and how can we compare it to other people's experience? That's what the universal laws of nature, which are the principles of possible experience, which can be cognized a priori, actually are. And so he says, thus the problem in our second question, how is pure natural science possible, is solved. Why? There is a systematization, he says, putting everything into one unified, coherent system. The systematization which is required for the form of a science is to be met with in perfection, it being brought to its fruition here, because beyond the above mentioned formal conditions of all judgments in general and all rules in general that are offered in logic, no others are possible. So saying no others are possible means that we have arrived now at the only way that we can really coherently look at these matters. It says these constitute a logical, and a little bit later he's going to call it a transcendental system. This is what we need in order to have pure natural science. And then now he says one other thing here in this paragraph. Finally, the principles by means of which all appearances are subsumed under these concepts constitute, now he uses another qualifying term, a physiological system. Now, when you hear physiology, you might think about the human body, right? Anatomy and physiology. He's using that term in a somewhat different way. So physio coming from, physique, the study of nature, the world that in which we experience things, in which change happens. So not just our bodies, but the whole universe, everything that we could experience, right? Physiological. So the logical is the underlying structure of all of these things, a physiological system, which he calls a system of nature. And this precedes all empirical cognition of nature and first makes it possible. So there's a priority here. And the priority is of what we are uncovering with these principles of possible experience that are the universal laws of nature. They're there first. That is what makes it possible for us to perceive and then judge and make sense of our experience and to, view it in a way that's not just subjectively valid, but objectively valid for all human beings. So he calls this the universal and pure natural science. Then he's going to have some, fairly long discussions about how this actually applies. And he talks about the first of the physiological principles, Grundsätze, subsumes all appearances as intuitions in space and time under the concept of quantity. There's actually going to be four of these, right? Because that's the way Kant is working. And these are going to give us, what we find in the pure physiological table of the universal principles of natural science is the axioms of intuition. Intuitions in time and space can be subsumed under quantity. The second, he says, subsumes the strictly empirical element, what we experience in our actual experience, sensation, which denotes the real in intuitions, not directly under the concept of quantity, because sensation is not an intuition that contains either time or space, though it puts the object corresponding to sensation in both space and time. And he's going to say, after going into some discussion about, darkness and, unconsciousness and all that, that what we're actually dealing with here is the peculiar quality of sensation that is involved, right? And he says that the understanding can anticipate sensations. They constitute the peculiar quality of empirical representations or appearances by means of the principle that they have a degree. And so far here, this is all, as he says, mathematical, right? Because it does involve some sort of numbering, even though it may not be just subsuming things under quantity. Then it gets even more interesting. With a view, he says, to these things' existence, right? we can go a little bit further on. And what we find is their determination is not mathematical, but dynamical, right? So it's changing in other ways. And he says, this could never be objectively valid and fit for experience if it does not come under a priori principles, which is what we're dealing with here. Fortunately, it does come under them. Appearances must be subsumed under, now here we get to sort of, you know, metaphysical ideas, substance, cause and effect, and what he's going to call community. So substance, concept of the thing, is the foundation of all determination of existence. Or so long as a succession is found among appearances, then we have cause. Lastly, so far as coexistence is to be known objectively, that is by a judgment of experience under the concept of community, action and reaction. And so he says, thus, a priori principles form the basis of objectively valid, though empirical, judgments, that is, the possibility of experience so far as it must connect objects as existing in nature. So let's pause here for a second. So we've got intuitions in time and space, quantity, right? Time and space, forms of intuition, pure intuitions as well. Then we're getting a little bit more rich and concrete with our experience. We have sensation of things, that's qualitative, not merely quantitative. Then we bring in the big guns, you could say, substance, causality, community. We're connecting things together. Right? What about this fourth one? So then he goes on and he says, finally, the cognition of the agreement and connection, not only of appearances among themselves in experience, but of their relation to experience in general, belongs to judgments of experience. Okay, so we've had those already. And he says, this relation contains either their agreement with the formal conditions which the understanding cognizes, or their coherence with the material of the senses and perception, or combines both into one concept, and consequently contains possibility, actuality, and necessity according to universal laws of nature. This would constitute the physiological doctrine of method. So distinction, he says, between truth and hypotheses and the bounds of the reliability of hypotheses. And so he's going to refer here to the third table of principles drawn from the nature of the understanding itself according to the critical method, Kant's critical method, that is. It shows an inherent perfection which raises it far above every other table that has been tried. And we're going to talk about those later on. Like, for example, Aristotle's categories. There's a little section on that towards the end of this. Kant saying, I have finally uncovered for us all of the possible principles of possible experience, and they're here in a system in these nice tables where things correspond to each other and you can wrap your head around it. Now, he talks about two other things in this section before we get to looking at how this would, say, apply to Hume. So one of these is that he says that all of these synthetic a priori principles can be brought under one single a priori principle, namely that of the faculty of judging in general, which constitutes the essence of experience. As regards the understanding, we can be certain there are no more such principles. So this is really quite nice, right? Now, he also wants to clarify for us that this does not apply to the things in themselves. This is a point that he's already made several different times. This, you know, examination, this transcendental analysis of the understanding and how it works, what it does in judgment, in cognition, this is not supposed to be about the noumena, as he's going to call it later, the things in themselves. And he'll clarify here that, for example, I do not say things in themselves possess a quantity, that their reality possesses a degree, their existence a connection of accidents and a substance. Nobody can prove this, because without any reference to sensuous intuition or a connection of this intuition in a possible experience, it's absolutely impossible. We can't get at the things in themselves through this. But that's okay. We don't need to. What we're doing here is looking at any possible experience that we're having, and what are the laws, the rules, the principles that govern that, not just for you or me, but for all human beings, potentially all rational. beings, right? And he's going to talk about proving these principles. He tells us more about the mode of proof of these principles, and he says that you must pay attention to this, which occurs under the title of analogies of experience. Those don't refer to the generation of intuition, but to the connection of their existence in experience, and this can be nothing but the determination of their existence in time, according to necessary laws, under which the connection is objectively valid and thus becomes experience. Now, you know, talking about proof here might lead you to think that he's going to give you a nice argument for this. And that's not the way that Kant is proving this. Kant is essentially saying, listen, the proof is in the principles. The proof is in the system that I'm laying out for you as the only possible system. You want to think of some other one? Go ahead. See if it doesn't fall under these principles. Right? So that is the kind of proof that he's carrying out here. There's longer discussions of these, of course, in the Critique of Pure Reason, but that takes us beyond the prolegomena to any future metaphysics. And now Kant thinks that since we have these, the complete set of the principles of all possible experience, we have what we need for pure natural science, and now it's a matter of explaining some of the other issues or clarifying matters that arise. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.